Hi, I'm Helen Wright, and I am a rugby coach. I believe that sport can be an excellent medium for the growth and development of human beings. But, like all things in this world, the only constant is change. I believe that sport delivery and coaching in sport has to change to adapt to the changing world around it. This podcast is about sport and coaching and change. What has changed about coaching female athletes or male athletes, athletes who identify differently than that? What has changed about coaching children or adults? What has changed? How will we change? Let's begin the discussion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to my podcast. Today, I want to talk about the world of representative sports and selection. Over the time that I have been involved in sport, this particular area has been the most challenging for me personally and as an athlete, and for me as a coach, and especially for me as a parent. I'm going to discuss this issue in that order: athlete, coach, and parent. So let's go back to the beginning of my rugby career. It was, at very best, an accident. I had been introduced to rugby by my husband at that time, who was very involved with the game. And as with most girlfriends or wives, there comes a time when you no longer have the interest to be a spectator. And, it gets long, it gets tiring, especially if you don't understand the game. So in the romantic phase of most relationships, the partners are eager to learn about these interests and show committed and devoted support. But as the relationship grows, the interest in something you might not have any connection to wanes. Well, on one of these waning days, I suggested to my partner that I no longer wanted to watch endless games of him playing rugby. And in my explanation to find an exit route, I said, well, it would be different, Scotty, if I could play, if I could participate, if I knew this game. But I don't want to just sit here and be a spectator to an activity I don't really understand. So done. Exit stage right. But then, one day, he came home from training with the most exceptional news. Helen, they've started a women's team. You can actually play now. Really? How wonderful.
I would love to.
And so I thought, well, let's give this a try. Let's see how this thing pans out. Best case scenario, I'd get a little injury, and then I'd have a little legitimate excuse to permanently exit from the game if I didn't like it. Well, I didn't get injured, and I didn't get injured, and I didn't get injured. So I finally thought, well, I better figure out how this game works so that at least I can play with some degree of competence. To my delight, the game was perfectly suited for a stout, strong farm girl who's been throwing bales her whole life, who wasn't particularly fast, but absolutely steady and completely tough. So, to the detriment of my high-performance game, I learned the art of trundling. Trundling is the cross between jogging and walking, and smart trundling is when you don't waste any energy on useless running all over the field, simply chasing the ball, showing everybody how keen you are. Because smart people know that at some point, that ball's coming back to the middle, or back to me. Sooner or later, I'll be in the right lane when it comes back from the real speedsters. The game lent itself to smart, tough, resilient individuals, and I was all of that. So I played club recreational rugby, and the more skillful I got, the more I enjoyed the game. And the more I could see this human chess of it, and the more I was intrigued and motivated to perform at a higher level. I wanted to really play this game well. So I tried out for the Edmonton team. Voila, success. Then I tried out for the Alberta team. Voila, success again. But this time, it became apparent that there was so much more involved here. Trundling was not going to cut it on a provincial team. So I began training and running in earnest, and I began practicing the skills particular to my position. I was a hooker, and that was the person who hooks the ball in the scrummages, throws the ball in the lineout, and at that time, it was pretty specific to the title and to the, now you can have anybody throw the ball in the lineout, and you can have anybody hook the ball in the scrummage. But generally, hooker, that was what they did. So the better I got, the better I could see the game and the more I enjoyed playing it. And especially in conjunction with these other very fit and skilled and smart rugby players. And I became friends with many of these players who I ended up playing with. And I just loved being around them. And it was so much fun. And my social life started to rotate around the rugby. And my private life started to rotate around the rugby too. And my identity started to rotate around the rugby. So when a national team was created, I was completely committed to making that team. And so it begins. The pieces that become the trauma that you don't see coming. They, the big they, coaches and managers, said that if we had outperformed our opposition, we would be selected to the national team. Okay, that's pretty much a clear-cut road to where I wanted to go. So in my player's mind, I decided that, yeah, okay, I'm good with this. I'm going to do this. And I just really wanted to do well. So I started working. And I started looking at the criteria, and I started being better at those things that they were going to pick on. So in my player mind, it meant that if I played better than my opposing player, I should be picked. So what is playing better? Well, if I win the contest for possession against that player, if I'm more effective in supporting my teammates, if I get around the field quicker with more positive outcomes at points of contact, if my team wins, that's a good one. All of these indicators would suggest to me, the player, that I should be picked. So when Alberta beat Quebec in that first championship, that first national championship, and I reflected on my play, I was pretty convinced that I had achieved the goal. So when the team was announced, and I had been chosen not as a first choice player, but as a sub, I was in shock. How is that even possible? I did everything the criteria had stated. I beat my opposition. We won the game. I hooked against the head, which meant like getting her ball. So like, when did they change the rules? And now what the hell, what in fact are the rules? In that moment, I felt completely betrayed, completely deceived, and completely at loss. What do I do now? Complain about how unfair this whole situation is? And we all know that being a good sport is a very important pillar in our social conditioning. And compliance is crucial to order. Well, whose order? Well, their order. The people who pick. They're the people who have order. And the people who did not pick me. The people who did not sit me down and explain that the choosing is about more than who is the best on the day. And in the motivation to get players to perform at their optimal, no one says, oh yeah, and you know, by the way, just because you perform better doesn't mean you're going to get picked. And no one said, oh yeah, and by the way, we're building a program. And you're 32, and the other player's 20, so we're going to invest our time in her. And yeah, no one said that we wouldn't have to have more regional representation on a national team, and so we picked the girl from Quebec. No one said anything about all of those other criteria that weren't written down and that weren't told to me, and everyone thought how lucky we all were to be selected to a team that was going to play in a first international game. But I did not feel lucky. I felt heartbroken. And I just added that failure as the crown to my collection of not good enoughs. If I had one piece of advice to give players in the process of selection, I would say that if you know in your heart that this is as good as you get, that you have left no preparation undone, and that you have done everything you can possibly do to prepare for this moment, and you've left your performance out on the field or on the court or on the ice, you will be able to accept the outcome and make decisions on how to go forward. If you're not sure that was your best, then maybe you need to go back and try it again. But at the end of the day, this decision, this selection, is actually out of your control. And just like the weather is out of your control, and you don't blame yourself for the weather, you can't give away the power over your own self-esteem to someone else. They don't know you. Only you know you. And you're not a victim. This didn't happen to you or to anybody else. This is just a process, and you are part of a process. And that process does not determine who you are. You determine who you are. You make the choices on how to go forward. You're the boss of you. And who you are is not what you do. Who you are is what you choose to do next. When enlightened folks talk about adversity, they say that these events are supposed to be the opportunities for growth and learning. And indeed, many years later, I would be able to pull my coaching philosophies from my experiences as a player. And I learned what not to do as a coach and what's required to ensure that players are given accurate information and treated in a way that allows them to understand the selection decisions so it doesn't cripple their self-esteem. One of my primary pieces of information at the outset of a selection session is to remind the players that this is an activity that they do. This is not who they are as a person. And whether they're selected or not has nothing to do with who they are as people. And so, talking to coaches, here are my rules for selection. Number one, ensure that your selection criteria is based on objective, technical merit, and that you can objectively justify that to the player so it makes sense to them. You didn't make the team because the other scrum half can pass both left and right, and you can only pass right. And we want to play against this team. We want to attack on the left side of the field. So Shield's going to get the nod this time. And number two, ensure that the player trying out for your team, make sure that they all know and understand the criteria and how you are measuring them. I want to tell you this story again about my experience with the national team. So I got selected as a sub for the national team the first time I tried out. And one of the things that they said, sort of as a critique, is that, Helen, you're not a very fast runner. You're not a very good runner. So I spent the next year running my ass off. I went home to the farm in Williams Lake and I ran around those fields. I ran up that mountain. I ran everywhere. And when I came back, I was like 20 pounds lighter because I had been running, even though I had been working on the farm, but I had less mass because I had been doing all this running. So at that point, we come back for the second tryout, for the second, you know, time that they're going to pick this national team. And we're going into the scrum machine, but guess what? This time, we're being measured by the impact, this scrum machine that they've designed can measure impact of people hitting the scrum machine. So mass, you know, is going to be an issue here. So even though I could cover the field lickety split, now we're being measured on a completely different set of criteria. Now I don't have the mass to have the same amount of impact as the other girls who are competing for my position. And I remember thinking to myself, you're kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Because the criteria changed and how they measured it changed. But nobody had said to me, oh, by the way, Helen, yeah, running is good, but mass is better today. No, nobody bothered that. So number three, ensure that the players know whether you're considering their past performance or whether the choices are being made on this day at this time based solely on performance. Your history can haunt you as a player, and coaches need to shut the door and evaluate the person in front of them on the day, and that allows you to be objective. If you let all that other stuff come in, you're just being biased by a history. If you're looking for the best or the fastest or the biggest or the toughest, then measure that. And later on, you can figure out if the fact that they don't function within a team situation is important and they show you that they can't, then you can let them go. But today, while you're selecting, stick with your criteria. Don't be influenced by the person's personality. Be objective. Collect the data and make the decision. And once you've selected the team, you can work on team dynamics at that point. If you're Barbie and you like ponytails and you put ribbons in your hair, I don't care. If you're the hardest, toughest pink person running around that field making tackles and better by far than your next contender, I'm picking you. And if you're the fastest little goth girl with black fingernails and black eyes and black lipstick, I don't care. If you can wield that ball down the field faster than anybody else, I'm picking you. If you make a mistake in selection, live with it. Don't make the player pay for your error. Don't all of a sudden hold them up and say, oops, we made a mistake. You're really not that good. Find a place. Live with your own mistake. Ensure that the players who are not being selected have been spoken to and advised of their situation prior to the announcement of the selected team. When I was standing there and they were announcing the names and everybody was jumping gleefully around me and nobody had spoken to me, I was absolutely dysregulated. I was in a moment of chaos and it couldn't have been worse. So that leads to number seven, ensure that the environment for the selection announcement allows the player the opportunity to receive the information in a way that allows them to retain their dignity. So nowadays, people send out the list that, you know, made the team by email or text message. And if you've talked to the player beforehand and you send that out, that way everyone can see themselves and where they are in the privacy of their own home and their own phone, and they can process that information with dignity. Most importantly, coaches, remember what it felt like when you were a player and you got cut, and have empathy for how they are feeling. So now I want to talk to parents who are watching all of this drama happen to their children. There is nothing you can do to take away that huge, huge ache in your own heart except to love your child back into wellness. You can object and you can yell and you can scream, but unless you're prepared to address and challenge the process, you will not likely change anything in this moment. It's the same challenge that parents face when they accept that allowing their children to fail is likely the best gift that they can give, but it is the most heart-wrenching thing to watch. Protecting our children from failing is an intuitive response. We can't bear the pain, our pain, so we take steps to ensure that our children are protected from that experience. But at the end of the day, that experience that we hated, that I hated, provided the basis for learning. I did learn from that experience, so much so that it inspired me to coach the way I wanted to be coached. And it inspired me to change paths and head in a different direction. And isn't that what learning's about? Looking ahead of you and seeing a fork in the road and going, yeah, no, I've learned and I'm going to try that. So allow your kids to live their own experiences. And support them no matter what the outcomes are, and all you can do is just love them. So when they get in the car, don't say anything. Just wait. Just wait and listen. Give them time to process what's happening. And when you think the time is right, you might invite them to share. So, how are you feeling? Are you okay? And maybe they say something and maybe they don't. But I will tell you something, parents. They can feel your love. And they know that their pain is being shared by you. And they just might not be able to talk about all of that right now. So be okay with the silence and just keep sending them love. They will talk when they're ready. And they will learn from what they've experienced just like you did. And like everything in this world, this too shall pass. Thanks for listening, folks. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Well, that's a wrap for this session, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please feel free to tick the like box because that lets me know if anyone out there is listening. You can also find these podcasts on my website, barefootflying.ca. That's barefootflying.ca. If you want to add your opinion to the discussion, feel free to email me at helenwrightrugby@gmail.com. That's helenwrightrugby@gmail.com. Talk to you soon. Be well.